Wapton Community Center.
It's Mornings with Dablo on the Voice of the Valley, AM 1450, KBMW.
8 minutes after 8 o'clock. Got a clear sky and a nice morning, 31 degrees. Nice October morning. Welcome to the October 20th edition of the Morning Show. Busy place around here. Got my good friend Mark Seabin to co-host the show with me
this morning.
Good to have you in here, my friend. Good to
Thanks.
See you again.
Great to be here.
And you were here in May, and now you're back we sort of refer to this as the back-to-school edition.
This is the back-to-school.
Because literally,
2 months in,
you went back to school,
yes.
You know, in September. Mark, an educator in the Fargo Public School District. And, hey, speaking of educators, our favorite historian, Jana Gagelin, stopping by. And you've been busy.
I have.
I say, Janet's been digging.
I have been.
Digging through newspaper stories, and today's topic is hunting.
It is.
Okay, what did you find as you were digging for hunting?
I don't know anything about hunting, the only thing I can, you know, share with people is, you know, the history of it. But, you know, if you think back when Morgan T. Rich came here and then we started to settle, and so the people in the area would hunt for survival. You know, it was a necessity. You know, it provided food for their families. It maybe sometimes kept predators away from their fields, but it was something that they needed to do. So as a recreation, that didn't exist for a long time afterwards. Sometimes you had people who would hunt for the pelt, you know, or the fur, something that they could also then sell.
Yeah, for clothing, too. Mm-hmm. Sure.
And they might have even hired out to farmers who didn't have time to protect their property. So then they would have the market-type hunter out there.
Trapping was big on the rivers, too, here,
yes.
Wasn't it?
Yes, of course. Yeah. You know, of course, it morphed into things like dogs and you know, that kind of stuff. But I read stories about people who would take a gun with them to do their morning chores. And then they would do their chores and then look up and shoot a couple of ducks from the sky.
You know. Whatever happened to come across. Yeah.
Yeah, so they would bring home, you know, food for the evening or the next day. Of course, then you have to go back to like 1883 when the most famous person came to North Dakota to hunt, which would be Teddy Roosevelt.
Teddy Roosevelt, yeah. And the rest is history.
The Badlands area. And by 1883, maybe some of the wildlife had, you know, gone towards the Badlands, mm-hmm. or it hadn't been hunted as much. Here, it was pretty well hunted. In fact, I ran across an article that says, this is 1887, the American buffalo will soon exist only in history books, and the old robe will be a relic of the past. The farmer and rancher have taken the grass, and the hunters, and they have no remorse. So by 1887, we were looking bad for the big game, the deer, the elk, the buffalo, the antelope. All of that was, you know, somewhat west of here. But because Teddy came, you know, all these other people came. It was like a safari, you know, so to speak. So
he showed up. Everybody kind of followed.
Well, yeah. And, and everybody thought that what we had here was not ever going to be gone. It was, you know, something that wasn't.
Endless supply, endless resource.
Yes, yes. And you'd go out and you wouldn't look at a field with ducks and count them by the dozens. You'd count them by the hundreds, you know. So it was, you know, very well supplied with wildlife. We even have the Modell Market, downtown Wapiton, and they were the headquarters for all kinds of different things. Fresh and cured meats, poultry, game, which would be something that people would shoot and bring in.
Mm-hmm.
And they were also the maker of bologna and other sausages in the city. So they were... They would do that.
Now your radio station's the only source of bologna, but back then it was.
It took us till 1891, after we became a state, that we finally got something that would be, you know, laws about hunting. And and so we had our first game warden in 1891.
Okay.
It was appointed by the governor. And they would go out and try to stop people from illegally killing buffalo, elk, deer, antelope, and they had a hunting season.
So we were starting to get control of this.
Yes, and we had a hunting season. January 1 through September 1 was when you couldn't hunt. So after September 1, you could hunt.
Right.
So, you know, this happened, but there was no funding to go with it. So the you know, there are very few people who were arrested or were fined because of that, because of illegal hunting. So there was no teeth into it, really. Yeah, that took a little while. So by 1897, we had something else.
And that's is that when the population started to pick up again?
Yes, of course.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. And so, you know, you had control over it, so you had a little bit more. But
one of the few times regulation actually really helped.
But it would cost you 75 cents for a license in state.
That was it?
That was it. If you were an out-of-state resident, it was $25.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and the fines were $25 to $50. And in 1897, that was a lot of money. Yeah, but there was no supervision of anything. So, therefore, you know, people just, you know, took what they needed. And like I said, most of the time it was survival. If anyone has had a chance to look at Virginia Gerger's Bonanza Farm books, she's got a couple things in there. And this one is Hunting in the Red River Valley. I think she talks. You want to go ahead and read if you want.
That's a great photo.
Yeah.
This photo has men showing their guns as their young sons stand behind them. It was reported in 1906 that area hunters were allowed to load their boats onto the Northern Pacific train and unload them in nearby sloughs. Mm-hmm. So the railroad actually helped them get from point A to point B.
Yeah, they would offer special rates if people wanted to come from the east, you know, New York or wherever, and then come by train and hunt.
The train picked up the hunters in the morning, dropped them off at the slough. The men could stay at the shack built for the section man out of snow fence lumber.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's how they constructed that. The shack had a stove and bunks. During one of the trips, the Winemere hunters brought back 250 birds.
Yes.
That's a nice haul.
Yep.
The legal limit, by the way, was 10 apiece. Hunters paid the train crew with extra birds that they had shot.
Of course.
So forget money. We'll just give you, you know.
Well, and if you went over the limit, you could just say, well, it's for the train crew.
Right.
You
know, so easy way around that.
Yeah. Virginia also has this one from 1925. Jackrabbits.
Oh, yeah. A lot of jackrabbits.
Yeah.
Jake Hendricks hunted jackrabbits with his 1925 Overland Model A car. In the 1920s, Jake, a businessman in Winemere, and other hunters trapped or shot jackrabbits for their fur. And fur off a jackrabbit was worth $1 a pound. In the 1930s, large drives were organized to do away with the rabbits because they ate bark off newly planted trees.
Yes, they still do that.
They still do that, But the photo here shows Jake Hendricks with quite an impressive take of jackrabbits. This is amazing stuff.
Yes.
I'm glad you dig for this.
Yeah.
The bison could have used that guy last weekend.
You're right.
So then we have actually, there were a lot of women who went out hunting, too.
Okay.
And, you know, you can see in that picture that there wasn't any camouflage-type clothing.
No, and they went out with the big flat hats, too.
Yes, yes.
Okay.
When I was visiting with Louie, he said that the rifles were very, very long. I don't know if that makes it easier to shoot a long distance. I know nothing about it.
There's a photo here with a Savage 99 and a Winchester 54 and a Remington.
Yeah, those were the big ones that were sold during that time.
But the ladies did not dress down for this. I mean, it looks like they almost dressed up to get out and go hunting.
Well, and they probably were in a buggy and had a dog that went out there with them.
Right. Just picking things up as they drove by.
Pretty much rode by, right. Which, of course, is illegal now. Mm-hmm. You know, you just can't do that.
Wasn't back then.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Good stuff.
I also read in this really great article from the North Dakota Historical is that a lot of the early hunters in this area jerry-rigged their rifles.
Yeah.
So they would use like a Civil War rifle. There are different kinds of Civil War rifles, but they would put rocks and glass and things inside and then put the powder and then shoot. And
improvise.
Yeah, they would fall backwards, you know, and go somewhere else and down the hill or whatever.
Oh, man.
Yeah, so, Yeah, it took a while before it became a recreational sport, and even for the farmers to be able to do that.
Great segment, Janet. Again, good work.
Yeah,
digging around here. We're out of time, but listen, you're going to come back next week.
I think I'll be able to talk a little bit about Muriel.
I'm going to bring you back here every week. I'm going to twist your arm. We got to get you in here. This is good stuff.
It was fun.
Janet Gageland talking Wapton history, talking hunting today, and we're going to switch gears and we're going to talk to Tom Schmaltz from Jankabah Zoo in our this Thursday's edition of the Morning Zoo. It's 8:18 at the Voice of the Valley, AM 1450, KBMW. Good morning. I told you about the countdown last week. Well, it's still underway. Have you heard about it? Oh, you will. Oh, you'll definitely hear about it.